Welcome to the Leadership Podcast, brought to you by LifeWest, the chiropractic college. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Oberstein.
And I'm your host, Dr. Mary Oberstein.
And we're excited to have you join us as we bring special guests in the world of health, leadership, business success, and chiropractic. Our mission is to create a brighter future for humanity, and we are thrilled to walk this journey with you.
Enjoy this episode, and thank you for being with us today.
Hello, and welcome to Life by LifeWest. I'm Dr. Mary Oberstein. I will be hosting today's episode, and I am excited for today. I have one of my good friends, a specialist in communication, here with us today, Betsy Butterick. Hi, Betsy.
Hi, Mary. Thank you for having me on. It's an honor to be in this space, especially given the fact that I am not a chiropractor, though I am a huge fan of chiropractic and a big believer and grateful for the care that I've been under over the years. So thank you for having me.
You're welcome. When my husband and I were going through people to invite on to do these episodes, you were one of the top people that came to our minds when we were just thinking of the need and what people need and what people ask for. And communication is one of the things that we hear over and over from not only our students, but new grads. So just tell me, give the audience a little bit of background, because I think you have a pretty interesting background.
Sure. I like to think I have sort of a non-traditional story, and it's a story that I love. So I graduated from Claremont McKenna College in Southern California. And I was originally from the Bay Area. I, at age 11, fell in love with Stanford women's basketball, and that was my dream school. So I applied out of college thinking, okay, if I could get admitted, I could try out as a walk-on. And that dream was never realized, but I went from being a young camper who went to Stanford women's basketball camps to then coaching at Tara Vanderveer's basketball camps while I was in college. And then before I graduated, Tara asked, would you like to come be the women's basketball intern once you've graduated from Claremont? So of course, you know, absolutely. So I went from Claremont to Stanford. While I was at Stanford, I met a woman named Heidi Vanderveer, who is currently the head women's basketball coach at UC San Diego. She's also Tara Vanderveer's youngest sister. And she at the time was coaching with the Seattle Storm in the WNBA. So I went from Stanford up to Seattle, and I was part of the Seattle Storm for a season, stayed in Seattle and joined the University of Washington staff for a year. And then Heidi got out of coaching the pros back into college, becoming the head coach at Division III Occidental College in LA. So I went and joined Heidi's staff there. And then we transitioned from Occidental to UC San Diego. So I was at UC San Diego from 2012 to 2015. And it was when I was still at Occidental, I believe back 2010, 2011, when I first became aware that coaching was something that existed outside of sport. And as soon as I knew that that was a thing that people did, I knew that that was what I felt most called to do. And so I enrolled in a year-long program out of San Francisco at a place called New Ventures West. Mm-hmm. And earn my what's called integral coaching certificate, which is really a fancy title for saying that we take a whole person perspective to doing individual coaching. Many people think of it as executive coaching. By any name, it means caring for other people and supporting their goals and their journey and helping them get there or do the things they've yet to do. And once I had that certificate, so I was coaching basketball and I thought, you know, I really would love to give back to the athletic community. And I'd worked in Division I, Division II, Division III. And at each division, I saw that there was such a need for coaches specifically to have someone that was there to help them be at their best so they could give their best to the student athletes in their program. And that responsibility often fell to other staff members or peers that they had in the community or sometimes a significant other, but there wasn't a dedicated person to really help coaches be at their best. And I thought, gosh, I'd love to fill that role, you know, to provide that service and meet that need. The challenge was that that wasn't a thing. Like there wasn't, you know, coaches didn't have coaches.
That's right.
So I thought, okay, this sounds like a really risky, great opportunity to, you know, I know it has value. I've been in the shoes of these individuals. I have a commitment to service and to helping support others. So why not give it a try? And in 2015, I stepped off the court and stopped coaching basketball to fully step into coaching coaches. And I sleep really well, but I didn't sleep much for the next 2 weeks because I thought it was one of the largest mistakes maybe I'd made in my professional life, like leaving this beautiful tiny studio that was 3 blocks from Winansea Beach in La Jolla and a wonderful institution and a team that I love and a coach that I've been so successful with to do this unknown thing that I didn't even know if anybody wanted or cared about. And since 2015, the evolution into not only being the coach's coach, but a communications specialist, mm-hmm. it's really been such a winding journey, one that I'm very grateful for and one that I'm extremely passionate about, to now get to do work with athletic departments, teams, corporate entities and institutions, executives of all professional fields around communication and supporting people in the issues or working through the challenges that are most important to them. So it's been quite a ride.
And I think I met you probably right around 2015.
Yes. So when I came to San Diego, yeah, that was when I started coming to your practice.
Yeah. And I remember the transition that you were going through at the time. Mm-hmm. I think that's right when you kind of coined that term coach's coach.
Yeah. I didn't know what to call it, but I thought, you know, I want to coach coaches. So let's just call it, I'll be the coach's coach.
Call it what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you also, you have a psychology degree. Psychology degree.
I do. Yep. So I graduated from Claremont McKenna with a degree in psychology. And I like to say, especially when I'm working with student athletes, that I have a degree in psychology and a background in sports, but I'm not a sports psychologist. I think maybe if I missed, you know, if I, in another life, I like to think I was a chiropractor because it's such a healing, helping profession. But I also think, you know, sports psychology would have been a fascinating field to dive into. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my life path didn't wind that direction. The thing I liked about coaching as opposed to clinical psychology, and I'll say, I think therapy is wonderful. And I love that that's being normalized specifically in our country. But for me, being a very empathetic individual, I knew early on that if I was to go with a traditional role as a psychologist, you know, think like the couch and, you know, people are sitting there relaying their issues and problems to me day after day, that I would experience a certain degree of burnout fairly quickly. And I had yet to develop at that time when I graduated college, the tools emotionally to be able to regulate sharing space with whatever someone brings and not taking it on and internalizing it myself. So that was a journey I'd yet to go on. And I think that veered me away from clinical psychology. But coaching I love because, well, I need to understand someone's past in order to help them work towards their desired future. We don't stay there, you know, so I need to know enough so that I can step into your shoes. But coaching works because I'm not you. So I have a different perspective and I'm able to support you making small changes that lead to a different outcome in your future. And that's what I love about it.
Yeah. And knowing you, I can't see you sitting there with someone on a couch talking. Like, I feel like you would get enough information, but you kind of want to just, you know, be out there coaching. Yeah. Coaching them.
It's really dynamic. And I think that too, to your point, having an athletic background, it's like, I knew from an early age, I didn't want to sit at a desk or behind a computer, that I needed to do something professionally that allowed for engagement that had a certain vibrancy to it.
And I have a similar background in that I was at some point a medical technology major and they threw me behind a microscope and looking at viruses in a petri dish. And one day I was just like, oh no, like I've made a terrible mistake here. And I was like, no, I need to be out. I need to be with people, touching people. I can't just be in a lab by myself. And so I pivoted. And I was so happy that I listened to that voice within instead of people telling me, well, you're smart enough to do this and it's a good job and it pays well. So that's the trap, right?
Like that's, and I see that so often with young professionals or individuals that are looking for, you know, well, what's my path? Like, I have this major, cool. What do I want to do with it? And it's a big draw of, well, you need to pick a respectable profession. You need to, you know, pick a profession that will withstand the pandemic. You need to pick a profession that pays well.
Right.
And I remember very clearly, I think it was in maybe 2013. I have a twin brother. Mm-hmm. And my brother, there was one point where we were both living in Los Angeles. So I'm coaching at Division III Occidental College, and my coaching stipend for women's basketball for the entire year was $7,000, which anybody that lives near California knows is not enough to live on for a year. So I got $7,000 for coaching basketball, $3,000 for coaching women's golf, which if you've ever seen me golf, you know that I have no business coaching women's golf. My business was really driving the golf cart and supporting the student athletes. It was not tactical or instructional at all. And then I would do private lessons on the side. And so I really hustled to make a living wage, and a living wage always meant just scraping by. Yeah. And then contrast that with my twin brother, who was working at a company called Good at the time. And he had gone from being the 13th person they hired when they first started, sleeping in his car in LA, which is totally not safe, but he did it, and working up through almost every position except CEO in the company. So he's making over $100,000 and I'm making $10,000 a year and we're living in the same place. And I remember we went home for Thanksgiving and he sat there and he said, "Betts, I have to say that I love that you're doing what you're passionate about, regardless of what it does or doesn't pay," because he was doing something that paid really well. And he was so overworked and so miserable that I was also overworked, but I loved it, you know? Yeah. So it was like the money is always a temptation, but I am a firm believer that if you truly find your passion and follow your passion, the money will come. And that's part of what I've experienced in this wild entrepreneurial journey is like, okay, you want to have a made up job and a made up title and, you know, no formal training in the thing that you are now a professional in that others are paying you to be really, really good at? Yes, because you have a passion and you have a purpose. And when those combine, the money tends to follow.
And our audience will definitely relate to this because, again, most of our audience is going to be chiropractic students and newer docs in the profession, probably some old timers as well, can relate to that. So, and I want to jump in. I want to jump right into communication.
Sure.
That's your specialty. And I know it's a big, broad term. So maybe share with us, I don't know, some of the golden nuggets, some of the things that you want to, I know there's so much you can talk about.
Right.
But share with us a little bit about like why communication? What is it that drew you to that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And sometimes it's a question I wish I would have stumbled upon earlier in my life, though I'm grateful that I did at the time that I did. As far as why communication, I'll say what I love about communication is that for me, it's central to everything that we do as humans. And when I work with athletic departments and teams specifically, I have a workshop called Championship Communication, and I'll always start by saying, you know, of everything that we need to do in order to be that team, that program that achieves the greatest success and wins a championship, why focus on communication? And the reason for me is that the buzzword most often associated with high-performing teams is chemistry. So great teams have great chemistry. Chemistry is formed through connection, and at the heart of connection is communication. So if we can be intentional about our communication, we stand a much better chance of generating intentionally that connection that we know we need to generate the chemistry that leads to our greatest success. So for me, communication is the foundation, the bedrock, the starting point for all great achievements, whether it's athletic or personal or professional. It starts with communication, and it's kept alive or dies, you know, with communication and lack of communication. The other answer to the why for me is that communication is one of those rare topics where we will never know everything there is to know about communication. It's a skill, so it can be developed by anyone at any time. You can start right now, or not right now, like after you finish watching this episode. It's something that anybody can take, you know, ownership and responsibility for, and there's no ceiling. So part of what I love about this profession, and I'll say more specifically about being a communication specialist, is that I am learning every day, every conversation that I have, every conversation I observe, things that I read or watch or listen to, I'm always listening with that ear of how can I take this nugget and then make it digestible or relatable for an audience or a client that I'm working with. So how do you disseminate all the information, because it is such a broad topic, and then put forth to others that which is immediately valuable and applicable. That's the challenge. And it's a challenge I get to work with every day. And so each day is different and so exciting.
Oh, and it's so, when you said there's no ceiling, it's like, talk about no ceiling in every relationship. When you said chemistry, I thought, yeah, not just professionally in sports and chemistry with your partner. And if you live with your partner, there's just like every day you're working on communication and connection, which leads to the chemistry part. There's like never a break. And that's both terrifying and it's also exciting because you get to, on some level, control the chemistry, right? Through the connection and the communication, or it can fail. which is the terrifying part.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And not to be negative and not to go down a dark path, but there's also some struggles with that. Like there's great communication. And can you share with us like some of the struggles that you've gone through on this path?
Yeah. And I'll say that's the rub a little bit of being a communication specialist is people expect you to get it right all the time. Mm-hmm. And I've learned the most from the moments when I've gotten it wrong. And especially in my responsibility to others, whether it's as a consultant or as their coach, I do aim to get it right. And I will be the first to admit when I get it wrong, it's a continual learning process. And so the challenge is to keep that beginner's mind always and to know what you know and to have confidence in what you know and to continually be open to what else can it be, you know, and the times when we find ourselves in conflict. And I do a whole workshop on confrontation for connection because poor confrontation, it gets such a bad name and such a bad rap. And when it's done well, it is the most powerful force for building trust within a relationship when it's done well. And that's the caveat, right? Most of us have had negative experiences with conflict or confrontation or have never been taught the skills of how to do it well. And so we find ourselves, you know, haphazardly falling into these conversations that do or don't go well and sometimes negatively impact relationships for a very long time. And we stay stuck in this cycle. And one thing I love about communication being a skill is we can start to upskill and break that cycle at any time through, you know, whether it's working on your own communication skills or different books or TED Talks or podcasts. Like there's so many resources. And so helping folks, being in a position where I get to help folks start to work on small things that they can do in 2 minutes a day, you know, with the active communication technique videos, great example. There's 35 of them, I think, that I have on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So ACT stands for active communication techniques. They're 2 minutes or less roughly. Mm-hmm. And they're designed to give anybody, regardless of age or profession or gender or background, anybody something they can do today to start to improve the way that we communicate and connect with other people.
And they're awesome.
Thank you. We're in a human profession and humans communicate or don't. And I think that success is largely determined by the degree to which we are comfortable, competent, skilled communicators.
Well, and I love that they're 2 minutes. I'm sure you did that intentionally, right? So that people can just watch
attention
them.
Attention span, very short.
And I love watching. I also love the outtakes. I'm not going to lie.
Oh yeah.
The outtakes are like some of my favorites. So, but you've taught me something probably 5 years ago that I use to this day, and I share it with other people and I teach it to other people as well. And it was such a simple concept that you taught me. And when I use it, the impact is incredible. And it was when you told me, before you speak, ask yourself the 3 questions. Is it kind? Is it necessary? Is it true?
Yep.
Do you remember telling me that?
Yeah. So that's a staple in many of the presentations that I do. It was a Sufi saying when I first saw it. I saw it at a conference now about 10 years ago. And it was, before you speak, let your words pass through 3 gates. Is it true? Yes. Is it necessary? Is it kind? And that, again, like this is one of those tools and a massive tool belt of, gosh, if we can filter our communication through those 3 gates, we're likely being very effective in what we do, what we say, what we communicate, and how our message is received. The true part, I like to say, unless you're a pathological liar, super easy to pass through.
Yes.
Like that's the, you know, yes. the the number one gate.
I was just going to say
the necessary. The necessary is where it gets interesting. And in relation to work I do with athletic teams and corporate teams, the necessary is almost like the drama filter. So it's the point where I'm like, I really want to say that, but I don't need to say that. It's not necessary. I want to, the desire is there, but it's not necessary. And then the kind part, what's interesting over the years, the pushback I often get from individuals is, okay, true, necessary, kind, but what if, Betsy, the thing I have to say isn't something that other people want to hear? You know, it's true, it's necessary, but it's not necessarily kind. And the ask that I have, the invitation in that space is, can we take into account that there is someone, a person with feelings on the receiving end of our message? And can we shape and craft our message in a way that says what needs to be said while also leaving the recipient open to hearing what we need to say? And we can do that through the tool of language.
And I came across a situation where I had to tell someone something and it was true and it was necessary. And I searched, it took me, and it was like something that was a little bit time sensitive, but it took me about a day or two because I was like, every time I said it in my head, it just didn't feel kind. And I'm a kind person, but it was like, ooh, that just, it's too sharp around the edges. It took me about 24 hours to 48 hours. And then finally, when I was ready to, and I had people going, did you talk to that person? Did you say that? And I was like, guys, I'm not ready yet. And finally I found the right words and I felt really comfortable about it instead of like, I hope it, I hope it goes well. I hope this person knows what I, it was like, you know what? I think we're going to pivot a little bit. And I, it was more about me, which it was, but it was like, I'm going to pivot on the situation a little bit. And I'd like to try something different instead of saying, you're not doing a good job. There's no way for me to come up with a kind way of saying to someone, you're not doing a good job. But I said, like, why, you're right?
Yeah, I'm laughing because I had a conversation with a coach yesterday and they're like, they just, this individual that we were talking about, they said, they just suck. Like, how do I say, I need you to suck less, you know? I'm like, okay, so let's work on that, right?
So I don't know. That just, I kind of stuck in my head and, like I have a thing. You're like, you're so good at what you do that there are times when it's confrontational, like a situation where I don't really feel comfortable communicating. I usually will ask myself, what would Betsy say? How would Betsy say this? And then your voice kind of comes through my head. I said, well, and it's just like you, it's like you smooth it all out. You smooth out the wrinkles. Still
appreciate that.
Yeah. You still communicate what it is. So I run it through this like iron in my head and I just smooth out my wrinkles and say, well, that's not necessary to say that. And is that really, even in the necessity of the communication, is that part of the communication necessary to say that? Or can we just say the core of it?
So, and kindness is telling the truth. You know, oftentimes we unintentionally do very unkind things where we think, oh, I can't say that. They won't be able to handle that. And so we don't say something that's crucially important for someone else to know because we're concerned about their feelings, or we make an assumption that they won't be able to handle it instead of taking responsibility for handling it in a way that allows them to receive it.
Right.
Or preparing ourselves for the fallout, because there's some things that just, there's no way around it. This is what it is. And there's only really one way to say it. Yeah. And I have to tell it to you this way. But taking, I think, Susan David in the book Fierce Conversations calls it being responsible for our emotional wake. So you choose your words and you use this tool called language to convey a message. And we need to be accountable for what happens after it's left our mouths.
Right.
And how are we taking responsibility intentionally for that?
Right. And what makes someone a great communicator?
I have two answers for that. The first is practice. And I'll often get feedback from individuals, oh, Betsy, you're so articulate, or you're so good with words, you know, and it's, I fully believe it's because I've had so many opportunities to practice. First, when I was young, reading and writing, specifically with poetry, my wife and I were talking about this the other day. She said, how is it that you're so good with language, the way you write, the way you speak? And for me, it had a lot to do with being exposed to poetry at a young age, the way that words became visual, you know, visual imagery through the language that was used in the poem, the way that there was meter and measure and rhyme and tempo, and that, you know, like I love haikus because it's such a small space and it asks the writer to be concise while conveying something usually very profound, right? So practice through reading and writing at a young age, and then coaching. I mean, whether it was coaching a team of 12 to 18 individuals or coaching at a camp where I'm trying to speak and get a message across to 500 young girls at a Stanford basketball camp, or speaking at an arena, you know, in the Seattle Storm. I've been given so many opportunities to practice speaking in so many different contexts. And when you have enough practice, you tend to get fairly good at something. The other part, part two of what makes for a great communicator, the best communicators that I know are exceptional listeners. And when we think about communication so often, if I'm asking a group, you know, how do you define communication? What comes to mind when you hear the word communication? We typically focus on our communication when we have something important to say, or when we're writing an important message. Those are both outward.
Right.
The best communicators that I know are exceptional listeners. And when we put in time listening, we get all of the information we could ever possibly hope to find in order to choose our words or shape a message or create a connection or build a relationship. We only do that through listening. And I love that quote that I'll probably botch now, something about the effect of when you speak, you're conveying what you know. When you listen, you're open to receiving new information. And that's the name of the game. If you want to be a great communicator, put in time intentionally to become a great listener. Because the more information you have, the easier it is to be very skillful in your communication.
Wow. That's great advice. Okay. In closing, I'm going to start to wrap things up. I have two questions that we end each episode with. The first one is, what advice would you give to yourself when you were a student, whether it was in college or, you know, just as a student communication specialist?
Before I knew I wanted to be a communication specialist.
Well,
yes.
Yeah, or even just like a college student, what advice would you give?
I think the advice I would give, Mary, is to never change. And what I mean by never change is never give up that role of being a student. If you can keep that curiosity, and it's easier when we're in school because we have a purpose, like I'm in school to learn. I hope for most people listening that that doesn't stop when you graduate. A degree is an achievement and one to be very proud of. But if you can keep that quality of curiosity and take it into every element of your life and be a lifelong learner, be a student forever, I think that, that would be the advice I'd give my student self, is never give up that role.
Which is great. Especially when you hear a lot of students saying, oh gosh, I can't wait till I get out of school, right? I can't wait till I'm done being a student. I know. And I get that. I get that sometimes
totally.
People, I think sometimes students need to do that first. Like, I'm done.
Yeah.
I need to wash my hands. But it's, you know, it's good to dig back in and just always be learning.
Right.
The
assignments are different, right? It's like, you're not getting like this paper is due on this timeline. It's like, nope. But keeping that beginner's mind that I mentioned earlier, that quality of curiosity in that way. Yeah.
Well, and the second question, it's a little bit of an offshoot of that, is, so once you started out on this path of being the coach's coach, what advice would you give yourself? Because, you know, it's not always smooth sailing when you first start out, whether it's in your position or being a chiropractor when you're like first out in practice. So what advice, if it's different, would you give to that person? Or yourself when you were just a few years in?
The risk of sounding cliche, the most beautiful things are the ones that require the greatest fight. And I love that quote that says the heart is the size of a fist because we're meant to fight for what we love. And there were so many times where, I mean, we're talking like full breakdown, tears. I don't know how I'm going to, you know, pay rent this month. Like, I don't know where the next opportunity or check is coming from, or if it's coming ever. And to stay the course in those moments, to find what's the next best thing that I can do that's controllable by me right now to put myself in a slightly better position maybe tomorrow, and to do that thing instead of letting all the things that you can't control or haven't done yet or should be doing overwhelm you. Like, if you can fight for the dream that you have, the thing that you know to be good and right and true, and just take that one next step in service of what you know, that's the battle. And when you fight that battle day after day after day, then you start to experience something magical. And I was taking a walk the other day and I was thinking, you know, I get it. Like, being 5 years in now, I get, looking back, how many times it would have been somewhat of already smart to say, you know what, I need to step away. Like, this isn't the thing. This isn't safe. It's not, it's reckless and it's wild and it's so worth it. And so if you're listening to this and you find yourself being like, I don't know, Betsy, like, I feel like I'm at that point, reach out to me, please.
Perfect.
You know, if you'd like to email or get in touch through my website, whatever it happens to be, because yeah, there's times where, you know, because of varying factors, you need to make certain decisions, but if you're really committed to doing this thing and to bringing it into the world, you'll find a way. And there were so many times where I didn't know that that was possible, but I always held on to that little belief. And I'm so glad I did, because this path that we get to walk, where we choose, you know, what we focus and how we spend our time and energy and what we pour out into the world, is such a unique, special space. And I'm grateful.
Well, I'm grateful that you stayed the path, because, you know, yeah, to me, when I think of the greatest communicators, you're the first person who pops up in my head.
Thank you. Thank you for taking such good care of myself and my body and my soul all those years, because you enabled me to do the work when I was really struggling with so many other pressures.
Well, you're welcome. And thank you for thank you for being with us today. I know that if one person grabs one nugget that you said today, it's got the ripple effect, and it can change, like you said, it can change chemistry, it can change relationships, it can change the world.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
And yes, your information is going to be below here. So if people want to reach out to you, I know you do coaching, you know, for the listeners, I highly recommend Betsy.
thank you.
And to our audience, thank you for watching today. And thank you for being a part of Life by Life West. And thank you for hanging in there with us on our mission to creating a brighter future for humanity, which is, that's what our mission is at Life West. So until next time, stay healthy, stay strong, stay happy, and keep communicating.
Thank you for joining us today, and for the love, commitment, and passion you emanate every day.
Together, we know we will make this world a better place.